So balancing success in business and in life, let me tell you a little of my story, because oftentimes what will take place is when I'm working with a group and I start to give you theories and tools, what you might think is, well, that's really easy for you, coach guy, because you don't have a real job like the rest of us, where, like, you know, we're really busy and we have a lot of emails and staff and problems and customer things. And I just want to kind of give you a little bit of my story and then help you to see why the topic that we're going to unpack today, I am absolutely confident if you take this and utilize the tool that I'm going to share. I'm not going to say it's the best tool, but it's an effective tool. If you will utilize it, it will help you to improve how you balance success in business and in life. So a little of my story. Grew up as a Jewish kid in Southern California. For me, the first goal that I remember was that I wanted to be a millionaire by the time I was 30. I remember that goal. And I think that goal came to me because I had an affluent family. I had aunts and uncles that were all entrepreneurs or attorneys. And in the area of Southern California that we lived in, we were middle of the road. But when we went and spent time with the relatives, we were in Beverly Hills, we were in Woodland Hills, we were in Malibu, and I got to see how they lived as a young kid, and I liked that a lot. So first goal, young kid, I'm going to be a millionaire by the age of 30. I like my cousins, but I liked hanging out with my aunts and uncles just as much because I wanted to extract some of that goodness that they had and learn. All right, so that tells you a little bit about the motivation and the focus as a young man. I will explain a lot about myself as well when I tell you that I'm a surfer and a drummer. And that will tell you that I probably lacked some of the wherewithal, some of the academics, and some of the brain cells to accomplish what I had wanted to accomplish with the goal. Because the lifestyle of surfer and drummer, I lived that, okay? So Jewish by birth, not by faith. Surfer, drummer, Southern California, money motivated young. I get my first job when I'm 14. I skateboard to Danny's Deli to wash dishes. I do everything from window washing, blah, 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 blah. I get into the professional world at about the age 18. I'm in office supplies, printing, and office furniture sales. Going to a community college, bought my first home. 18 as a fixer flipper, money motivated. Okay. School was a distraction. I had an opportunity to join a CEO of a mortgage banking firm, and I was at the time enrolled to attend San Diego State University. San Diego State University in California. Any Californians in the room? What do you guys know? Let's just go back a couple decades. What was San Diego State known for? It's the party school. Perfect school for surfer drummer, right? Now, in a moment of vulnerability, you need to know they turned me down, okay? So I now have a very large gap between goal of wanting to be millionaire by 30 and how I took my SAT and the state of mind I was in is a whole different story. You would want to move to another breakout session if I kept going on this, but come on, Daniel, let's get back. All right. I get into office supplies, printing, and office furniture. The CEO of this mortgage banking company, he brings me into his office. And he says, so I understand you want to go to San Diego. I am watching what's happening with our office supply bills and all of our facilities. And you're selling furniture to us. And he said, I'd like to give you a shot. And he said, I'll make you a guarantee that if you join my company, he said, I'll mentor you and I'll train you. And you'll make more money in your first year than anybody makes their first year when they graduate college. I'll fast track you. And he said, guarantee it. So for some reason, I said yes. That was at the age 20. Age 22, I'm in a major skiing accident. I'm climbing the ladder there. His promises were true. It was a great couple-year ride. The skiing accident is what gave me the opportunity to start to examine Judaism. This is not the session for this, but But age 22, I came to the Messiah. I then am promoted. I'm a branch manager. So I'm a loan officer. I'm a branch manager. I'm a new believer. The career is going incredibly well. And I get married about a year later. I have three small kids. I'm then promoted again. I have offices throughout the Western U.S. I'm a Christ follower. I'm involved with church. And I'm at a Promise Keepers. I want to fast forward to the age of 30. I'm at a Promise Keepers at the age 30. Remember, a critical date for me. I'm at this PK event, and it's the first time I hear the audible voice of God. And what I heard was, you're chasing the wrong idols. Now, we'd brought the company public a couple years before. There's a succession plan. The founding CEO is on his way out. I'm on my way in. It's seven figures, beautiful. It's everything I've ever wanted. And I then have a conversation at this Promise Keepers event with God. I think I heard you say that I'm chasing the wrong idol. And maybe I need to throttle back a bit because I've been spending more time in hotel rooms. I'm on airplanes. A lot of stress. I mean, 4:30 in the morning until 11:30 at night. I'm a worker because I had that goal, even though I was a follower. So I hear the audible voice of God. You're chasing the wrong idol. I want to compromise. No, quit. I take a one-year sabbatical. I come home from that Promise Keeper event, share with my wife, take a one-year sabbatical. And in that one-year sabbatical, moved from Southern California to Oregon. And it was in that year where I was given the vision to start this company, Building Champions. Why do I share that with you? I share that because today, as a CEO with about 50 on our team, coaches and busy, and you know, it's a great company. I share that with you because I want you to understand, I've been in the corporate world. I've had a branch. I've run multiple facilities throughout a part of the country, and today do this. And I think one of the greatest struggles that I have had over the years is that struggle of, how do you balance success in business and in life? And I don't care where you're at, what I'm going to share with you, whether you're leading a company of three or a company of 3,000 or bigger, is that you have an opportunity to improve how you lead yourself, the decisions you make, and then how you carry forth on those so that you truly can find more success, more balance in work and in life. But you have to have an intentional plan for how you do it. So that Promise Keepers event for me was a defining moment in my journey. Defining moment. Leaving there, the one-year sabbatical, the one thing that I absolutely was clear about was that whatever I did in this next career, I wanted to be about the kingdom. I knew that I had to be an evangelist, a disciple maker. I had no idea how that would play out. But the real burden I had was to help people to wake up and see that they were chasing the wrong idol. I was given the gift at the age 30. Been married for 26 years. I have four kids. Greatest gift of my life, next to Christ. Many areas of my life, not perfect, but growing in net worth. The relationships that I get to serve. It means that I say no to a lot of business opportunities. It means I say no to a lot of financial opportunities. But I get to say yes to things that many of us will take for granted because we don't have a plan in place that is connected to actions. We haven't made decisions about what's truly most important. So then we respond to the crises and the opportunities. And then after a hard day's work, when we say that we're going to go work out, when we say that we're going to take her for a date or him for a date, when we say that we're going to get down on the ground and wrestle, we bring our leftovers there. And as a result of that, we're neglecting some of the most important areas of your life. So I think that's probably why you're here when you read the title. But I want to give you an out. I'm going to be talking about putting together a life plan. And this is a smaller group. And I would love for it to be somewhat interactive, so that I can get through what I need to give to each and every one of you. But is there something that is on your heart, something that you have a real need for, that when you read the description of this breakout, you thought, man, I hope he hits this? Is there something you want to leave with? Something you want me to talk about? Because I can adjust. They're having more fun if you want to go over there. Yeah. Christians. The 90-day plan. Okay. The 90-day plan, and I'll tell you what, I won't leave today until I've walked you through the 90-day plan. It is so straightforward. Once you download it, you'll look at it and the instructions, it's so easy. It's one of the easiest tools that we have, but I will explain it briefly when I'm done. Was there another need that some of you had that you had hoped? Managing yourself better. Good. Great. Yep.
Because I understand on the surface, but when it goes deeper, shouldn't we be getting rid of ourselves and let Jesus? So in other words, why do you have to start with yourself? Why can't you just go beyond? I think of C.S. Lewis who said that, you know, you only truly delight when you forget yourself. And so why do you have to start with yourself on a deeper level?
That's such a great question. And over the last 20 years, I have wrestled from a theological perspective around some of the principles that we share, but I know there are scriptures that are written as well where we are told the plans of a man's heart are deep waters, but a man of understanding pulls them out. We, you know, we're told that we are to run the race in such a way to where we get the prize, right? And so what happens is in our faith journey, so often what we'll do is we won't give thought to the areas that he has called us to steward and then make decisions and then carry those out. So do we crowd out the Holy Spirit? Absolutely not. But do we have clarity around the areas of life of stewardship that he's entrusted us to? And that's what I want to talk about. But I so appreciate it. I'm going to get to this side first and then I'm going to come back to you, my Congo playing friend, and then we're going to move. There was a hand over here, was there not? Yes, sir. Yes. You bet. Yeah, what do we do? How do we respond when we've got plans and goals and then they go awry? How do we deal with that? Yes, sir.
Validation and affirmation. We're constantly wanting to know, especially in the morning for me, Lord, validate that I'm doing well.
Yeah.
We're even looking for that from our peers, from our wives, and for those women, from their husbands. So how do you incorporate that validation and affirmation with the tools that you are using to teach?
We'll save that one for the end because I need to figure that one out. So I'm not going to take any more questions because I've just exceeded my bandwidth and capacity. So I understand what you're looking for. What do we do when the plans don't work? How do we deploy some of these strategies? How do you balance plans versus spirit-led, losing ourself versus self-focus? How do we address with validation and wanting to know that we're on that right track? The one-page business plan. Let's jump into it. Self-leadership always precedes team leadership. How many of you have today or have had a plan for your business? How many of you have had a plan for your life? Wow. Written plan. You guys are awesome. Awesome. Well, that's really what I'm going to be talking about. The format that I want to share is one that is dynamic. And there's a straightforward, simple process. For those of you that raised your hand, maybe it's a fine tuner for you. For those of you that did not, I just want to encourage you, regardless of what stage of life you're in, to consider this. I have a CEO on my team. He was a CEO of a very large banking institution in the States. Very successful guy. In his youth, he was the director of commerce for Ronald Reagan when Ronald was the governor of California. And Jerry is our CEO mentor. Jerry turned 72, 73 this last year. And when I first started working with Jerry, Jerry was in his young 60s. He may have been even late 50s. Jerry, an incredibly successful guy, all the affluence, all the influence, all the professional accolades and the financial gains that came along with it. when we got done with our very first coaching session and I had shared the concept of life planning, he was all in. He was one of these humble leaders. I could not believe that, you know, a guy that was at the time, let's just say 10 years ago, so I'm late 30s and, you know, he's late 50s. And he's all in. Teach me. I want to learn. I noticed in that moment that hunger, that humility. He leaves the coaching session. He builds his life plan. He comes back. And what he says is what everyone in the room needs to hear. And that is, Daniel, I wish that somebody would have walked me through this when I was in my 20s. And again, in that moment, I went, you know what? It's never too late. It's never too late. And it's much better if you walk through it earlier. He was with us last week at our event, and he shared with the entire group as a result of that, how he has friends that he's had since he was, you know, 6 years old, friends that he had since college days, friends that he had when he was with his first in his first business at McDonnell Douglas, how this group of guys, he calls them the Top of Hill Gang, how as a result of his life plan, he's more intentional with these guys, and these relationships that were just buddies prior to life planning, they now end with them saying, hey, I love you. And he's got deep kingdom, meaningful relationship with these guys, not all followers, that have been in his life for a long time. It has to do with intentionality. The life planning process, I'm going to walk you through it straightforward. The first thing you need to do is you need to invest one day. You need to pick a day to put this process to work. The location is really important. You need to pick a day where you can unplug and you can go somewhere that's a treat for you. Pick a day, pick a location. Third thing you need to do is unplug. You cannot have your phone going off, your iPad telling you that you have email. You cannot have internet access because it's just too big of a distraction. And all you go with is your journal, your Bible, and the tool that you're going to download from our site. You're going to go, you're going to have prayer support, and you are going to go and mine for the plans of the man's heart. The plans that God's put in your life that you want to extract so that you can make the best decisions moving forward. So once you pick the date, the location, made the commitment to unplug, shared it with a few folks, got your prayer support, you've got your Bible, you've got your journal, you have your life planning tool, you're going to go through this process of life planning. And the tool that I'll give you will walk you through it. But the first thing you do is you write out your eulogy. Many of you in the room have done this. You've written out your eulogy. The reason that I am an absolute proponent of it is because I know that I'm an ignorant man. And for some reason, I buy this lie that there will always be tomorrow. I can get to them tomorrow. I can get to that tomorrow. And really, at the deepest, innermost part of me, a man of faith, I believe in heaven. I just don't believe that I'm going there today or tomorrow. I think I've got time. And yet, you don't know, nor do I, right? We just don't know. And God's given me the gift of having the ability to sit with young friends, young family members, and watch them take their last breath here. And they're next in eternity. I've been given that gift multiple times. It's sobering. And that gift helps me with this. Because in the Psalms, Psalm 90:12, so teach us to number our days so that we may gain a heart of wisdom. Psalm 90:12. I write my eulogy out because it helps me to understand my days are numbered. And I want a heart of wisdom. My head is easily deceived. I got tomorrow. You know what, I'm going to get to it when this busy season passes. Then I'll get to her. Then I'll get to them. Then I'll get to it. Tomorrow, I'm super busy. I've got opportunities here. This is huge. We might land this huge client. Yes, I need to go fly. Yes, we need to go do this. That'll wait. There's always tomorrow. Now, I'm probably the only one that has those voices playing in my head. Maybe a couple of you are going, I know what he's talking about. We have to write out our eulogy because we need to be awake. We need to be on the alert. See that you walk circumspectly, not as the fools, but as the wise, redeeming your time because the days are evil. We have to walk circumspectly, carefully. We need to be aware of our time. We write out our eulogy. It's a great way for us to come to grips with internally a belief. We're only here for so many days. Talk to anybody who's been given their death sentence. Talk to anybody who's gone into the physician's office where the physician said, I've got bad news for you. You need to get your affairs in order. You've got 60 days at best. They live differently because they're keenly aware of the numbering of their days. And the scriptures tell us we should be living that way. Write out your eulogy. What would be said about you today, now? The beautiful gift is that if you get to the very final sentence, you're still alive. You have opportunity to adjust how you're living based upon what you wrote. Now, head and heart are engaged. I've written out my eulogy. I'm sitting in a special place. I'm by a river. I'm on a beach. I'm at a mountain. I'm in a nice suite. I'm somewhere where there's not clutter. I'm somewhere where I can connect with the creation of the Creator. Really helpful. I'm not attached. There's nothing vibrating. There's nothing dinging. I don't have 7 files. Maybe my mind is like ADD and I'm wrestling. I get up and I walk, but I've got the whole day. I've got the whole day. I write through that eulogy. I've engaged my head and my heart. Teach us to number our days so that we may gain a heart of wisdom. The next thing that I do is I identify my accounts. I like to call them accounts because accounts mean something to each and every one of us. You all have accounts, and every month you get a statement that shows you how you're doing in those accounts, whether it's your short-term checking or whether it's your long-term 401k. You're looking at those because your desire is that you're accumulating net worth and that they're growing. And as I look at this room, many of us are looking at that more, maybe closer today than we were 10 or 20 years ago, right? Well, we have other accounts in our life where we're also in control of how we invest. How do we engage? How do we treat? What type of energy and focus and attention do we bring to the other areas, the other accounts in our life? Let me give you examples of your accounts. Right at the very front and center is our God account. It's the account in which everything flows through it for us. First account, God. For many of us, the next account's marriage. Not always, but for some. And maybe for the rest, or maybe for another group of us, the next account is family. And then I would encourage you that you then break it down. I've got an account for Allie and Dylan and Wesley and Emily. Each kid have different accounts because I am called to steward them and to invest in them and to accumulate net worth in those accounts. And I'm in control of the actions, the attitude, the mindset that I take with each and every one of them. So am I clear or am I lazy? Am I proactive or am I reactive? I'm going to tell you that many of you are reactive in how you love your kids. Many of you are reactive in how you love your spouses. It's quid pro quo pro. She treats me well, I treat her well. She treats me bad, I treat her bad. She pays attention to me, I pay attention to her. She loves on me, I love her. She doesn't, I don't. I know I'm the only one that lives that way. But you know what? We're called to be different. We're called to be outside of ourselves to where we're not living out of what's important to us and self. The scriptures tell us how we're to treat our spouse. The scriptures tell us how we're to treat our kids. The scriptures tell us how we're to treat our body. The scriptures tell us how we're to treat our family. The scriptures tell us how we're to treat our brothers and our community, the believers and the non-believers. It's crystal clear. You want to lose yourself? God's given you an opportunity to be the steward of each of those accounts. So are you mindful? Are you on the alert? On the alert, standing firm in your faith? Or are you reacting and responding and allowing emotions to dictate what version of you you bring to everybody he surrounds you with? Written out my eulogy, I have each and every one of my accounts. Now I'm going to create a gap again, just like I did with business earlier. The next thing I'm going to do is I'm going to write a vision for each one of those accounts. Sherry and I, at the age 75, we sit as an intimate couple. we are truly one and best friends. There's nobody that I would rather spend time with than my bride. We look back on our marriage and we celebrate the beautiful years of oneness, the lives we've been able to impact through the gift of marriage. We study God's word together. We have fun together. We are one. All right. Why do I need to see something like that for 25 years down the road? I need a magnet. I need something to pull me forward. I need to review that all the time. I need to see what I want to see at the age 75. I want to see that at 75, God willing, I am so in love and digging this woman that I've been in love with and digging since we were 11. But I'll tell you what, she can tell you there's certain times in our marriage where she don't feel the loving and the digging. She feels some of the digging, but it's the wrong kind. And it's because I lose sight of the magnet. I lose sight of what I want. If I don't have something that is greater than my current reality, I will respond based upon how I'm feeling and how she's treating me or how you treated me earlier in the day. I'm an idiot. I'm a sheep. Created in God's image with a helper and a counselor that will enable me to overcome my sheepness and be the wisest steward of what he's entrusted me to be steward of. And in the marriage account, it's her. So I've got this magnet. I've written it out. It's got pull power. So even when I don't feel like it, that's what I want. That's it. That's the vision. Now there's a gap, current reality in that state. Next step, I've got vision for each one of my accounts. Purpose. God, what role, what purpose do I play in this account? The beautiful thing about putting a life plan together and trying to figure out your role or purpose for each one of your accounts is you can connect your purpose scripturally to every account you can come up with. Your health account. We're called to be stewards of God's temple, right? We're to treat this thing as God's temple. This is where he lives. Do we really believe that? Last week, I did a health breakout for a group of people this size, and I spoke on the topic of health, believers and non-believers. If we really believe that this thing is God's temple, and we have a conviction, we just don't value it, but we have a conviction around it. If we really believed it, do you think we would make different decisions with regards to how we treat it? This is God's temple. Even Christ, in his years, he grew in stature, in favor with God, and in favor with man. He grew in strength. Took care of the temple. So, vision, purpose. What's my purpose as steward over the temple? What's my purpose as father over these kids? What's my purpose? What role do I play as your brother? As a business leader, what's my purpose? I used the marriage account earlier. Let's stay with that. My purpose? It's to love Sherry in ways that cause her to be more of who the woman God's created her to be. I am to lift her up towards the Lord, not pull her away. The verse, Ephesians 5:25, right? I'm to love her as Christ loved the church. But it doesn't stop there. Not only am I supposed to give myself up for her, but what comes after that? Yeah. So that she may be pure, without stain, without wrinkle, without blemish. I'm to lift her up. So if I understand my purpose, then my actions need to line up with that. If I have this vision and I have this purpose, then I can't be the guy that's staining or wrinkling her. Make sense? Men and wives, I can talk to you. Right? What are the wives supposed to be doing for the husbands? Respect. Now, it doesn't say which one comes first, but if I'm living it as husband and I can only control myself, I go to bed at the end of the day knowing I've done what I need to do and I'm accountable to God for the one he has gifted to me as life mate. Not a marriage session that's happening next door. All right, I've got my accounts. God, marriage, family, kids, health, finance, ministry, fun, self-development, extended family, community. You pick your accounts depending upon where God has you. What has He entrusted to you to be a steward of? Then you pick your vision. You write out your vision for each and every one of those, and that vision needs to compel you. Then you know, you go to the Word and you figure out what your purpose is for each and every one of those accounts. So the way I originally did it decades ago was I had a sheet of paper, and the sheet of paper was all around this room. And I would grab the sheet of paper. One was for Sherry. One was for God. One was for family. And I would just grab the sheet of paper and I would just go. Sheet of paper, vision, purpose. Now, what are the actions that I can repeat on a daily, weekly, monthly basis that will enable me to add maximum value to those accounts? There's some actions that need to come from me based upon that vision, based upon my belief in that role, that if I do these things, I know I am adding maximum value. And these actions become non-negotiable disciplines. Non-negotiable discipline. Pray with Sherry every night before we go to bed, regardless of whether or not we're in the same geography. I need to be that leader, that guy that is interceding on behalf of us, praying for protection, praying for favor, thanking Him for the gift. But it's a non-negotiable discipline. I can tell you, in a lot of the work that we've done with believers, we have our Building Champions, and for years, Jim White and I started Ministry Coaching International probably 14 years or so ago. A lot of the work that we've done in the lives of ministry leaders, pastors, parachurch leaders, it's astonishing to me. Astonishing. The high percentage of men that won't pray with their wives. Mind-boggling. Fear, vulnerability, intimacy. We need to get over it. Is it a non-negotiable discipline? You know, I know that we have feelings of hypocrisy if our actions haven't shown that we are the Christ-like leader and therefore we don't. Obedience. You do it regardless of how you feel. It is a non-negotiable discipline. Your health account. What activities can you carry out on a daily, weekly, monthly basis for your health account? You get so clear on the specific action. Praying with your wife in marriage. Praying with your kids. Health. Bedtime. Wake up time. Workouts. How, what, and when. Rest. What are a few actions that you can get down and write them out so specific that you can take them from your life plan and put them right into your calendar? One of my teammates is in the room, Bob Nowak, and Bob can tell you that from my life plan, that everybody on the team knows what's important to me, what I value, what my beliefs are based upon my life plan, because on Mondays, unless I travel, where I will then reschedule it, on Mondays from 12 to 2, you won't see me because I have I have date lunches with Sherry and have for years. It's a kind of an operational date on Monday. It makes Monday my favorite day of the week. But it's a two-hour lunch where she and I connect. It's a life plan action from my marriage account that makes it to my time block. My assistant knows it. My team knows it. And nobody can take me to lunch on Monday. When I am asked to come to FCCI and I'm going to need to fly on a Monday, Sherry and I look at that and we say, okay, when are we going to reschedule the Monday lunch date? And then we reschedule it to Wednesday. So I land tomorrow. She'll pick me up at the airport. I'll get my lunch date. What about Tuesday at lunch, Wednesday at lunch, Thursday at lunch, Friday at lunch? In the office, we're at the gym. Living out a conviction, either running, lifting, doing something to take care of the temple. You're writing out your life plan. Your eulogy wakes you up. You identify each of your accounts. You write a vision for each account. You write your purpose for each account. Then you write just a few actions, repeatable behaviors. Here's why you do this. Your businesses are really demanding. And as you encounter success, you will encounter even more success. And that means more opportunities, more opportunities, more opportunities, which means that you're going to have the opportunity to say yes to more good things. If you say yes to all of the good things, it's like you going to the Ritz-Carlton smorgasbord, their buffet breakfast on Sunday. Have any of you done that? Anybody have goldfish disease? I do. I'm not allowed in a room like that. Because you throw all that good food out there, I want it all. And I want it all now. And then I enjoy it all, and then I feel sick. In life, if we don't get absolute clarity around the difference between the good and the great, we will not be able to balance success in business and in life. Most of us in the room don't have a problem that we just don't work enough. Any of you here, just because you're just not putting in enough hours? I need to put in more hours. Anybody? I don't think that's the problem. It's the other way around. We're putting in a whole bunch of hours when we're at home. We're thinking about business. Electronics are going off. We're putting kids to bed. We're getting back on the computer. We're thinking. We're working. We're responding. We need to have conviction around the areas of our life that are truly most important so we can say no to the good, so we can say yes to the great. You need to be able to have the conviction to say no to the good. No. No, we're not going to launch that product. No, I'm not going to join that board. No, I'm not going to give that talk. No, I can't mentor that young, good, amazing woman or man. No, they're really good things. But just because they're really good things does not mean that God's calling you and me to do them. There are too many guys and gals that get burnt out, flamed out, and disqualified from the ministry or from their kingdom opportunities because they flame out in areas of their life where they played a unique role, a role that only they could play. So you've got to be crystal clear. It will cost you, but the return on the investment will be huge when you look later in life and when you're not living a life that's filled with regrets. Because in the areas of your life where you've been called to be the steward, be that guy or gal, you've had clarity. You've made decisions. You got crystal clear on those actions and you made that decision. And now all you're doing is managing the decision instead of every day waking up going, all right, what's most important? What's going to come my way? Yes, yes, no, no. Yes, I'll do that. You know what? I'll date her later. Oh, yeah. I've not seen him in a while. I need to. That's not who we were called to be. So we need to become proactive and intentional in all the areas of our life. And when you spend a day and you go through this process, you will then have, for this season, clarity around what areas of your life God has called you to be the unique steward of. And you'll have clarity around some actions that you can repeat over and over and over again to just be the intentional guy or gal in those aspects of your life. Now, what happens when you do that and plans fail? What happens when you're taking care of God's temple, you go in and the doctor tells you you got issues? In that moment, you acknowledge your humanness and you pray. And you adjust and you don't throw away the plan. The plan doesn't guarantee this blissful, perfect life. That's heaven. All the plan does is it keeps your mind aware of what's truly most important. It does not guarantee that you're going to have great success. What happens when you're that guy or gal and he or she is not proactive and intentional and he or she makes dumb decisions and throws it all away? Then you adjust your life plan. And you pray because your reality's changed. This does not guarantee that you're not going to avoid bumps and bruises. What do you do when you're that guy or gal, that mom or dad, and the kids don't follow, and those free-willed little people with your looks and your last name, they go off in this direction? What do? You pray and you adjust and you stay on the offense. Be on the alert. Stand firm in the faith. Be strong. Act like men, man. Let all you do be done in love. There's so many scriptures for us as men and women, as followers, to redeem the time, to make the wisest decisions. All right, so you've invested the day. How am I doing on time? Good. You've invested. Oh, I'm actually done. You've invested the time. You've got this life plan. About a month ago, I had a client, an atheist. I love the guy. Love the guy. He abuses me more than anybody. comes in for a coaching session, and he's ornery. I mean, mad as a hornet. This isn't working. I almost didn't even want to come in. I'm not getting the results. Life plan's not working. I'm like, okay. I understand that probably there was some sort of a blowout in the marriage, a parenting issue. Something is causing this anger. All right, tell me, what's the force behind this conversation? I'm not seeing the traction with my wife. You know, I'm still not making any better decisions. I'm not seeing the results. I said, okay. You completed the life plan about 4 months ago. Tell me, how often are you reviewing it? When was the last time you took a good look at it? I haven't looked at it in months. Okay. We've identified the problem. Just because you invest the day, it's not like hocus pocus fairy dust. It's work. Now all you have is you have a document. It's a document that you invested in building. And now every morning you need to be reviewing it. You need to be mindful, and Henry's going to talk about that when we're done here, mindful of what's most important, mindful of who you want to be, mindful of who God's called you to be, mindful of the actions. You need to schedule the actions. This is a document that you use as a dynamic tool to help you to make decisions. So you review it every day for 90 days, and then you review it every Sunday or Monday for the rest of your life. And you're always adjusting it as life adjusts. Make proactive and intentional decisions with how you lead at home and how you lead at work. You want to find success in business and in life? Start with life, because life is just one account. I'm sorry, business is just one account of your life plan. So don't allow it to be the driver. Does this make sense? I would hate for any of us to miss Dr. Cloud. I'm done. I think I answered most of the questions. Dynamic. What happens when the plans don't work? Readjust. Pray. Get outside insight. The one-page business plan, I'll talk to you at the end of the conference or at the end of today's session if you have time, and I'll walk you through it. All right? Validation. My quick answer is we are to live to please an audience of one, as Jim said, and you and I are to be validated by our Father, and we cannot look for it anywhere else. And I know the flesh wants to, but we have to die to self. And may he get the glory. May he be the one, even Christ. Well, you know, this is my son, and him I am well pleased. That's our journey. So we're doing this, my prayer daily. Help me to see him like you see him. Help me to love him like you love him. And at the end of the day, may I have served him in ways that bring you glory. All right? Thank you.